Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 102.
This week on the podcast, Scott Brown and Paul Ryan find out, along with the rest of America, that maybe this whole Obamacare thing isn't so bad after all.
The world's most powerful, casually informal club, the G8, just revoked Russia's non-existent membership card.
And Fox News finds the elusive connection between the Malaysia Airlines disappearance and Benghazi.
Hillary Pillory is back, as Clinton makes a completely unshocking pivot to the right of pretty much everyone on foreign policy.
And beloved civil rights hero Fred Phelps dies. And to honor him, Michigan begins allowing gay marriages.
Florida's Republican Hispanic outreach continues to go just about as bueno as expected.
And sure, California's drought is causing terrible water shortages, but oh my god, what about the rabid skunks?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
And you should.
You should. It's where...
Do it.
You should consider looking us up on Facebook, too.
Yeah.
I mean, once you're there. Once you're on the internet.
Yes.
What harm does that do?
None.
Go to Twitter. I mean, for God's sakes, we're
right.
Everywhere.
Totally. You know what? There's a lot of important news going on in the world
Sure. This
week. And we're going to lead with Obamacare because we want to. And
we're the kind of people that like to do
over
that sort of
the other two giant news stories.
Yeah.
So we'll get to them.
The other two news stories, you can predict what they'll be because you've heard nothing but those two
right.
news stories for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
But it's like the final push for Obamacare. And there was some like sort of fun news this week. So like,
that's
it.
That's the news.
So here goes.
Here it is. The first thing is that we have found our Nate Silver.
Found the Nate Silver.
For Obamacare. Thank
yes.
God. Because it turns out the government has sort of been managing this in a rather incompetent fashion.
Obviously.
And since they couldn't be trusted to do anything sort of vaguely mathematically
correct.
Related to building the website, why would we trust them to come out with correct figures?
Right. So, yeah. And it's also hard, too, because, like, they're running, you know, the government. They're running healthcare.gov, but, like, all of the state exchanges are sort of, like, you know, releasing, like, daily updates, basically. And nobody is really sort of, like... or had been keeping track of it, or
right.
at least nobody had been noticing that anyone had been keeping track of it, but somebody had been, actually.
Yeah.
His name's Charles Gaba?
Charles Gaba.
Something.
I'm going to say Gaba, because
I think it was Gaba,
know...
I heard an interview with him on NPR, and I think it was Gaba. He's
sort
of
a
boring... He's like a boring... He's not even a math guy. He's like a...
Just some guy.
He's a nerd. He's
a
like a boring
guy.
Web developer. And,
yeah.
like, I heard him say, he was just sort of like, I was interested in it because, like, he had tried to get on
right.
to get it and was sort of, like,
right.
unsuccessful.
He tried to sign up on
like,
October 1st for Obamacare
and also
and
because,
got
sort of, like,
off.
He was just sort of, like, interested in it just generically as,
right.
like, a web developer. And then
well, and
also
he's someone who's involved
like,
in his local Democratic Party, so
right.
he's just sort of interested in how Obamacare is doing and how people, you know, how popular...
Right.
It sort of is getting.
But like Nate Silver, he has proved that once you sit down to do some math, you come up with the right answers.
Yeah, that's right. Once you're doing math, mathematical answers will appear
that's
in
it.
Your midst.
Uh-huh. And they're right.
Yeah, and they're right because numbers don't lie.
Nope, they don't.
So he was able to predict that, you know, last week we announced that we hit the 5 million mark. We
right.
announced that. Obama announced it first. Then we
right.
announced it
right.
on
but
the
Obama
podcast.
Didn't announce it first. Charles Gaba announced
Charles
it first.
But Charles Gaba announced it first because he predicted it before
he
Obama
knew.
Actually knew.
Yeah, he said the day that it was going to hit 5 million.
And
he also
yeah.
rightly predicted when California was going to hit 1 million.
Right.
So he's basically sort of like... You
he's
know,
the guy
he's
that people are now following
and you
to
can,
know.
Yeah, and you can literally go to acasignups.net, and it's just, you click on it, and it's the most boring website
couldn't
on Earth.
More boring.
It couldn't
also,
be more boring. It's a
could
giant,
be uglier.
No, it's ugly. It's a giant spreadsheet,
yeah.
basically. You click on it, and then it's like,
here we,
complicated. As I, also,
absolutely.
I if
couldn't understand what it said.
I don't like, if there's one thing that I like less than math, it's an Excel spreadsheet.
For God's sakes, those are the worst.
The worst. And that's what it is. It's
yeah.
it's a website that's a giant Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. yeah.
But, you know, hey, those
it's
work
got,
too. Like
got,
math, they also...
It's got numbers with answers.
They'll get
and
you there.
One of his
yeah.
answers is that he predicts that our final tally for, you know, till for the end of the month... will be 6.2 million
right.
signups.
Which
is
a giant victory because it's more than the 6 million that we revised the number to be after the complete failure at the beginning when
right.
we had, when the number was 7 million.
Million.
So we're getting in between the two numbers,
yeah,
which is
we're hitting closer
great.
To our mark. His number, you know, we should note, is a slightly different figure than the CBO is predicting anyway because they're predicting how many people will have, like, completed their enrollment and he's working off of just sign-up numbers.
Right.
But obviously, if once you've started signing up and you're going to pay a penalty if you don't continue signing up, like, why would you not continue to sign up?
Yeah, you're going to continue
signing up. You're going to keep signing up.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a matter of when you feel like paying your first premium.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. So congratulations, America.
Yes.
You did it. Met our lower standards, lowered from the original high standards that we had.
Correct.
He also brought up an interesting point, I thought.
Yeah, which I hadn't thought of this at all.
That that he thinks that one of the big sort of untold stories of Obamacare will be the number of off-exchange enrollees. Because there are people who don't qualify for subsidies and don't want to be trying to deal with the boondoggle that was healthcare.gov.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, just because healthcare.gov was not working didn't mean you couldn't go then
you couldn't just get buy healthcare.
A health plan that was going to be sort of like at a comparable price. And if you weren't going to be, you know, if you weren't the type of person who was going to be getting the subsidies anyway, there was no reason for you to use the website.
Exactly.
Like, because the only reason that you would use the website was to be able to see sort of like the what things that you were going to be able to qualify for. And if you weren't going to, you know, if you were just somebody who just wanted some healthcare and knew that they had to get it under this law, then you could just call up Blue Cross and be like, hey, I'm sort of
in
the market for healthcare.
Right, because now, you know, they can't sell you plans that don't meet the qualifications for the Obamacare plans anyway. So it doesn't matter if you go through the exchange.
No.
So that's an interesting point because
one of
the things that Obamacare has done is it's made a lot of health plans cheaper than they would have been on the open market in the first place. So a lot of people, you know, either had employer-based health care or were sort of like paying less money for terrible plans. But there are people who have been paying big money for regular plans this whole time.
Yeah.
And those plans got cheaper under Obamacare.
Yeah.
You know? Significantly cheaper, they're still expensive, but they're much cheaper than they would have been.
Yeah.
So there's a good reason for people who didn't qualify for subsidies to still have gone on, you know, gone to shop for new plans.
Well, and, you know, people who had pre-existing conditions too, you know what I mean?
Couldn't like they couldn't get insurance. Because it was going to be $1 million a month.
So they may have just, you know, signed up with a health insurance plan at that time when they realized that the healthcare exchange wasn't working. You know, I mean, they've
just been like, fine, I will call Anthem.
Yeah. And it was interesting because on the, I was listening to NPR and they were interviewing this guy and they were sort of doing just like a general round table and they had some other experts on too. And, you know, talking about like how this has brought the cost down. You know, we don't exactly know how many young people are paying into it. We don't know how many healthy people are paying into it or whatever. But like they had somebody on who was like, you know, they're not sort of like technically like allowed to be saying this, but like when you talk to a lot of healthcare companies, actuaries, they will sort of are getting to the point where they are sort of admitting that this is enough people that makes this system tenable.
Yeah.
Which
is a huge victory.
Which is a huge victory. So even if you don't get to the 7 million, even if you just pass the 6 or whatever, but, and even if, you know, I think right now they're saying like a quarter of the people are 18 to 34. I think they initially wanted 40. But even if it is a quarter, like that sort of like is enough to pay.
As long as the system is supporting itself.
Right. That's
what you
need.
As long as insurance companies are making money, everyone's happy.
Exactly. Right.
Except for consumers.
Right. Except everyone.
But this is a good way for us to be happy with them. This is the first time that consumers will be able to be happy with insurance companies.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. But if you're looking for, you know, updates to, you know, in the final sort of, you know, what week, oh, I guess it's a week from today.
Yeah.
You know, push.
Right.
To, it's acasignups.net.
.net.
He knows.
And if you're a person who knows math, you might even understand what the website says.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so that's a sort of exciting big story with Obamacare is that we're bringing you the final numbers before they happen.
Yeah.
In other news, they've decided to issue extensions for people who face technical glitches in the sort of rush to beat the deadline.
Yeah.
Because we know, I mean, there have already been some of these issues, but there's definitely going to be some issues, especially in states that aren't like super into their exchange or whatever, where there are going to be some technical concerns as everyone is in a mad rush to sign up at the very last minute.
Yeah.
And they've said that they're going to allow any applications that people try to start before the deadline to remain open so that they can keep working on them after, obviously. But there's also going to be some deadlines for people that tried and failed to get their applications even started because of technical glitches and whatnot.
The other thing that from this same sort of round table that I was listening to, and I just want to put this out there because it made me proud of California again. And we sort of mentioned the numbers, but if you weren't sort of like directly paying attention, we're at about 5 million right now. 1 million of those are from California. And that's our state exchange.
Yeah.
So I realized that, yes, we have more people than most of the other states, but we don't have 1/5 of the people in America.
That's true.
And I think it just
And
sort
we
of
didn't
like,
have 1/5 of the uninsured people in America.
No. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, we were a state that was, like, really frigging into this. Yeah. We were out early in it. Other than one outage.
Covered California, like, was well advertised.
Right, it was well advertised.
The day the exchanges were supposed to go live, and it was super simple and worked.
We had, like, some random outage, I think, in February for a couple days, basically. But, like, on the whole, it has been, like, sort of, you know, it's the shining example yet again.
Yeah.
California. Beacon of hope to the nation, or something like that.
Yes, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're so hopeful here.
We are.
For real.
Yeah. But, you know, so good on us.
Good on us. If you try to do something, oftentimes it's easier to do it.
Well, that's the thing. I know. And they were talking about, you know, some of the other, you know, the other big states who sort of, like, need to do well for this sort of, you know, for this to happen are, you know, they were talking about Texas.
Right.
And they're sort of, like, actively ignoring it. And their numbers have been terrible. I mean, like, Rick Perry doesn't want anybody to sign. I mean, like, you know, they're actively trying to get people to not sign up for Obamacare. And that is a good way to get people to not sign up for Obamacare.
Not trying to get them to sign up is the number one strategy to not getting them to sign up.
Correct.
It's so really quite simple.
Yeah, it's the smartest thing that Rick Perry's ever done.
Exactly.
Just putting those two, you know, things
together. Obvious facts
being able
together.
To make that. That's math that Rick Perry can make work.
Exactly.
Right there. Yeah.
But I think at some point when everyone in California is waltzing around with their health insurance being glowing, happy people.
Yeah.
People in Texas are going to be like, now wait a minute.
I know.
Hold on. Just a moment.
Yeah.
Why is everyone in California so fucking happy?
Yeah.
That's going to be why.
Yeah, they're not dying.
Exactly. Yeah. Not dying takes a huge stress off. Well, there was that study that they did like a year or two ago in, I think it was like Oregon or somewhere, where they gave a bunch of people that were like, you know, that were on some sort of subsidized healthcare program. Some of the people ended up on a sort of complicated government program, and some people were just given free healthcare, and they did a study on, like, whether the people were healthier after they got the free healthcare, and they were like, ultimately, their health was the same, but the people who had free healthcare were so much less stressed out because they just, like, when you're poor, there is nothing more frustrating than having to deal with a health issue.
Yeah, of course.
It is so mind-bogglingly complicated, and it is so difficult. And if you just don't have that stress anymore, and your only stress is how to figure out how to eat enough, that, surprisingly, takes a big load off.
Yeah.
That's much easier to sort of wrap your mind around the sort of, you know, the inadequacies of your everyday life.
Right, exactly.
When you don't have this massive thing hanging over your head. Meanwhile, Matt Drudge basically gave the government an interest-free loan. He files his taxes quarterly, and so he tweeted earlier this week, just paid the Obamacare penalty for, quote, not getting covered. Mm-hmm. I'm calling it a liberty tax.
Ah, yes.
And then the White House responded, or one of their spokespeople responded with, flat lie, no fee for previous year, scary how much influence he once had.
I know.
But then it turned out that he files his taxes quarterly, so he had paid a projected penalty because he's declared he's going to go without health care for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Health insurance. He's going to go without, because of Obamacare, we've forced his hand. Yep. He's going to go without health insurance for the rest of his life.
He's just going to pay the penalty. He's going to pay the liberty tax.
Right. He's also going to pay a bigger tax, which is when he starts having actual health problems like a human. He's going to have to pay for that out of pocket. That's going to be no fun.
It's going to be rough.
Because here's the thing. If you don't love Obamacare, fine. That's your choice. Don't go without health insurance to prove the point.
That's dumb. Come on.
It's ridiculous.
It's the same health insurance that you would have had prior to calling it Obamacare.
You're still paying a private company to provide you with health insurance. Like, you're doing everything you used to do.
What an idiot. He's such an idiot.
America really wins in this circumstance, though, because the more Matt Drudge is having health problems, the less he's going to have time for this kind of shenanigan nonsense. So, because as soon as Matt Drudge has, like, a bad flu, he's going to be gone. Yeah. He's going to be broke. So, maybe we can just find him years from now living in a trailer somewhere in the woods, living off the land.
Yeah, he's bankrupt.
Bankrupt and crotchety and everything that you would hope for him.
That's it.
meanwhile, a bunch of Republican politicians who have spent the last 10 years, not 10 years,
long time.
It felt like the right number of years.
Yeah, back when George W. Bush was president.
Right. The last, more like, what, like five years? railing against.
Convinced that Obamacare is terrible.
They are now finding out that it's helping people.
Well, that's
by accident. At times that it's maybe inconvenient to find that out.
Right. Well, the time that you don't want to find that out is in a room full of people when you're giving a speech about how terrible it is.
Terrible. Yeah.
That's not the best time. You want.
No.
As Scott Brown.
No. Scott Brown is doing his glory tour of New Hampshire, whatever he's up to.
Glory hole tour.
Yeah, glory hole tour of New Hampshire. Where he's like fake running for office, but like he's like trying to dispel the idea that he's a carpetbagger by going on a bus tour of New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, he stopped by the home of Herb Richardson, who is a state representative, who's a Republican in New Hampshire. And sitting in Richardson's trailer home, because Richardson went bankrupt at one point and had a huge house and then went broke and now lives in a trailer, and calls Obamacare a monstrosity and saying that the Democrats didn't even read the bill before they passed it and it's just a huge disaster.
Yeah.
And then Richardson chimes in with a little tidbit about himself, pointing out that the law has been a, quote, financial lifesaver for him.
Yeah.
Because...
Oops.
Yeah. Whoops. He had been injured on the job.
Right.
And he was asked to pay $1,100 a month for COBRA.
Yeah.
To keep his insurance, but he was only getting $2,000 a month in workers' comp. That leaves you $900 to live on. That's not even hard math.
No.
$900 a month does not a living
wage. Can't do it.
You can't live on that.
No.
Especially, like, don't be paying more than half of your income to
on
fucking
COBRA?
Health insurance.
Ugh.
Like,
God,
COBRA.
Yeah.
In any case... under Obamacare, they found a plan that is only $136 a month because they qualify for subsidies because they went bankrupt and have no money and live in a trailer.
That's approximately $1,000 less than their previous.
Right. It's real. That's simple math, too.
Yeah.
In any case, Brown did not respond. It was in a house. It was like in a meeting and there were a bunch of reporters there.
Yeah.
So it was probably a pretty awkward
moment.
And then last week, HuffPo also reported that the Republican Party chair in New Hampshire, Fergus Cullen.
That's a quality name.
Why does every Republican Party, the sort of like institutional people, all have like these ridiculous names?
Can you imagine being at a party with
Fergus Cullen and Rince Priebus?
Like, it's the most terrible time that I can ever picture having.
Yeah.
Hanging out with the two of those people.
The absolute worst. And you would have to refer, like, you'd have to be like, oh, Fergus.
I know.
Here's Rince. Do you guys know each other? Like,
I know.
It would just be like you were in some sort of ridiculous sci-fi novel
Some of these Republicans, like, his name is Fergus. He probably goes by, like, Cully or something like that.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Like.
Maybe he goes by Ferg.
Fergs. Fergalicious.
Yeah. Ew. Hope he doesn't go by that.
Me too.
In any case, his health insurance, he announced last week that his health insurance premiums decreased by $1,000 a month.
Oh, boy.
For his family under Obamacare. He says he still hasn't been won over by the law.
Well.
Like, all right.
What else does he need?
What
do you need?
What more do you want from it?
You have $1,000 more per
in your pocket
to spend on whatever you want.
Yeah.
Anything.
On something that will require you to undergo more health care than... If you want to take up a cigar habit, that's $1,000 a month. If you want to eat Cheetos, spend $1,000 a month on Cheetos, you can now afford both the doctor's visits to deal with the health problems resulting from all the Cheetos, and the Cheetos themselves. It's a win-win. Paul Ryan had a similar situation at a town hall.
Right.
Where someone got up and just basically told him that the ACA subsidies are a good thing, and that he was paying $700 a month for his health insurance, or is currently paying that much. And his new insurance with the subsidies is going to be something like $200 a month.
That's $500, people.
Yeah, that's another simple math. And then this guy had a friend who also was benefiting, who had cancer or something. I mean, they went on a whole tangent about how great Obamacare was.
Yeah.
At this town hall meeting in Wisconsin that was with Paul Ryan.
Right. And also Paul Ryan is on his sort of like, you know, tour of how to fix poverty right now.
Yes. This is the poverty tour.
This is one potential solution.
This man now has $500 more a month than he currently did.
Right.
That's enough to feed a family.
It certainly is. A large family.
A large family.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone's
can't
winning.
Can't fight that.
He can't fight math.
Nope.
So in any case, Obamacare is going great. Things
really
are really
winning. Obamacare FTW.
That's right.
Yeah.
But then we have to talk about Ukraine.
Ugh.
Nobody's winning in this situation because it's A, really complicated, and B, really boring.
Ugh, the worst.
And also, no one has a name that I can pronounce, so I can't keep straight who all the major players are.
No.
It's so complicated.
Yeah.
What happened, though, that was sort of hilarious is that, so basically, everyone is at this nuclear summit this week.
Yeah.
Which I think is here. I think it's in the States.
Oh, is it? I thought it was in Europe.
Maybe it's in Europe.
I don't know. Who knows?
Nobody knows where these things are happening. But in any case, and in the midst of all of this, Ukrainian troops have left Crimea. They were ordered out because it just got too dicey over there because the Russians had taken over Crimea.
They were taking over the bases in Crimea, where the Ukrainian soldiers were.
There are some very sad shots of Ukrainian soldiers who are not well-armed and, sort of don't have the right materials, cowering as, Russian soldiers, order them around.
Right.
And it's too bad. It's not what you want. But anyway, so on Monday, Obama and a bunch of other G8 leaders, minus Russia, announced that they, condemn the what they're calling annexation, and some people are calling a vote. It's hard to know. Depending on whose side you're on, it was either a vote or an annexation.
Right, yes.
It's not clear which. But then they're not going to recognize that Crimea now belongs to Russia or whatnot.
Right.
But they also announced that instead, a while ago they all pulled out of this G8 summit in Sochi.
Right, Sochi.
Right.
It was supposed to be in Sochi. I don't know.
Frank really wanted to say that.
I did.
Like a 1920s radio voice.
I couldn't say supposed to be in Sochi. That's what I couldn't do.
But in any case, they all pulled out of that a while ago. Then they decided, on Monday, they announced that they're going to have a group of 7 meeting in Brussels.
Oh, boy.
So they're ostracizing Russia socially, which is the worst.
That's the worst. But Russia doesn't really care. I love what they said. They were like, what did they call it? They were like, oh, it's an informal meeting.
Club.
There's no membership cards for the G8 or something.
They said, this is Sergei Lavrov, who's their foreign minister. He said, the G8 is an informal club. No one hands out membership cards, and no one can be kicked out of it.
I think you just got kicked out of it.
You just kicked out. Well, and he also said, if our Western partners want to believe that the format has exhausted itself, we don't cling to this format. Mm. So they're just like, well, fine. You don't want to be our friends? Great.
Yeah.
We're about to become the Soviet Union again.
Right.
Because Russia is the most recent. It used to be a G7. Russia is the most recent admission into the G7 because they weren't a country until the 90s. So, the G7 at the time was not trying to deal with the Soviet Union.
No.
So, in any case, it's dramatic times over in this social club that is the world powers lunchroom. But the U.S. also voted to give aid to Ukraine and is basically suddenly super friendly with Ukraine. Like, we all care so much about Ukraine.
No, never cared before.
Never have mentioned Ukraine in our lives.
Once.
But now suddenly that Russia wants now that Russia wants half of Ukraine, we're all up in the other half's business. But in any case, the Russian prime minister said that Crimeans are now going to be getting Russian pensions. They're going to be getting better than Ukrainian pensions, as it turns out. And they're also basically turning it into a tax-free zone until 2015. They're trying to offer a lot of exciting, economic motives for people to be excited about this situation.
Yeah. I have a dumb question.
Sure.
Russia has a president and a prime minister? Is that a thing people are doing?
Well, they do. I don't know that their prime minister does anything.
Okay.
Because I feel like Putin is the dictator,
he wouldn't let him. Yeah.
He's just a guy. They probably, just to keep up the guise of being the kind of place that has people running for stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
Russian elections sound suspect to begin with.
Yeah. They're probably similar to those North Korean elections that we talked about last week.
Exactly.
Where there's only one person on the ballot and can only
vote
yes or no. Everyone votes yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. There's a lot of Cuba had these elections that were sort of elections because people would vote and you could vote against someone or whatever.
Right.
But there weren't enough people running for it to be that much of an election.
Right.
It was just everyone was in the Communist Party. So it was we're just voting for the Communist Party again. And at the end of the day, Fidel was in charge. So whatever.
Yeah,
everyone else. And now it's a little different because he's not really in charge anymore.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, it was this Russian system.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as democratic
as
initially they would like you to think by having terms prime minister getting thrown around. In any case, John Kerry met with Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, at this summit that they're all at on Monday. But then also, Lavrov met with the Ukrainian foreign minister as well.
Right.
So
whose
people
name
are thinking, we're not going to.
Not going to even be attempted.
Definitely not going to try
on
that
this
name.
Program. No.
What kind? I'm going to try it right now. Ready? Deschitsaya. Deschitsaya?
Deschitsaya. I'll buy that.
Yeah. There is a whole run of 6 consonants in a row in this name.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. If you're counting the Y's,
let's count the Y's.
We're counting the
those
Y's.
Those aren't real Y's.
Not actual vowels.
No, they're not vowels.
No.
They're not. They're cheat is not a
no
vowel.
No, it's not.
So okay,
certainly isn't.
And then there's Malaysia.
The other big story.
Right.
Supposedly, we're all just now supposed to believe that this is at the bottom of the southern Indian Ocean.
After a week of alien conspiracies and comets coming and
acts of God
and black holes and whatever, now we've just all agreed it's at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah. So we had like some new, I think, radar photos, and all the countries sort of like are pooling their radar together, which everyone was sort of scared to do because everybody sort of like didn't really want to know like what everybody's radar was kind of like
looking at
and stuff like. But anyway, so they've got these sort of like objects that are like off the, you know, like 100 miles off the coast of Australia or something. Also, this geography gets really crazy to me because like I shouldn't be like, if a flight from Malaysia flies south, it shouldn't end up off the coast of Australia, like, in my brain.
Right.
I realize that, in reality, that's what happens. Exactly. But, like, just, it doesn't, it shouldn't.
No.
I'm saying.
Sure.
Anyway, so, apparently, you know, they've got these pictures of just, like, these, you know, generic things that could potentially be planes that no one can find that they've been looking at since, like, Friday or whatever. But, like, now we've just sort of, like, all decided that that's what those things are,
and then it's just at the bottom of the sea, and that's where
we have
it.
So the Malaysian Prime Minister, like,
had it.
Why is
it the only plane in the world that has fully disappeared in the bottom to the bottom of the sea, and nothing floats on the plane at all?
I don't know.
There's not an item on the plane that floated?
They're apparently, like, saying that they can't, like, find it because, like, the weather is really bad there, and it's, like, raining, and it's windy, and they're, like, flying around, and they can't find it. But, like, we've just all settled that that's what happened.
Right.
Now, basically. And we sent, like, a black box detector. Apparently that's like a thing that you can just like send some sort of
sounds
like,
very suspect.
Like, well, how does that work?
No, don't want to know.
Like, I don't know what that is. No. So anyway, but that's there.
Right.
It's on the scene.
Looking.
For whenever we find something at the bottom of the ocean, which is...
Once it's at the bottom of the ocean, do we then need to find it?
Like, I think we care because we want to know what happened.
Sure.
Because like...
Don't we all? But
what was it doing down there anyway? What was it doing in the southern Indian Ocean off the coast of Australia?
That's a great question. It doesn't, to me, have implications for the larger flying community in the way that, like, an obvious mechanical failure would.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't sound like the plane just, like, had one of the things that causes planes to crash.
That's true.
So I'm sort of like, I care, but I also am like, I don't know if I'm trying to go to the bottom of the Indian Ocean to find out.
But the families are sort of like...
Needing closure,
but they're also, like, they haven't really said when they're going to fly the families there, because the families want to, like, go there, like, to Australia, but, like, it's, like, really, also, why do they need to go there? I get sort of, like, you want to, I guess, but, like, is it the, like, are they going to fly them out to the
bottom
of the ocean?
Are
they all going to get a giant submarine to take that? That's not, it doesn't seem
nobody knows
anything. So, but anyway, that's where we're at with that right now. It's solved, and yet... Not at all not solved.
It's sort of disappointing that we're never going to really know.
I know.
Like, by the time that we do know, it's going to be over.
Yeah.
I'm not going to care anymore.
Right. But, you know, CNN was really doing the Lord's work on their Malaysia Airlines flight disappearance. All of the cockamamie theories were coming from CNN.
Yeah.
Because they were only covering it. You wouldn't have known that Russia had invaded Crimea. You wouldn't have known anything else other than that there was... No news about the Malaysian airplane.
Right.
They were no newsing it up over there on CNN. Well, Fox News is now...
Getting in the game.
They're back.
Yeah.
They were not going to be outdone by CNN.
No.
And their black hole theories.
No.
Because they have a better theory.
Of course. Yeah.
Not about where the plane is, but how it is similar to something that it may not shock you that they find it quite similar to. I'll let you...
Okay. So... We're talking about the Fox News... This happens on the Fox News show, The Five.
The Five.
Which is a show I've never heard of.
No, I think it's a show with five co-hosts. I think it's
what
the...
What a surprise.
It's the Fox's The View.
Yes, sure, sure.
Sort of.
So, Andrea Tenteros, who's one of the hosts, directs a statement at what is supposed to be the Democratic co-host.
Yeah.
Who is a Fox News Democrat.
Yeah.
And I think it's Bob somebody.
Yes, it is.
I can't remember who it is. It's not somebody I care about. Anyway.
No.
No one... So she's speaking of how the families... This is sort of... She's saying what the families must be thinking.
Right.
No one has come to my house. No one has told me what's happened. Bob, get ready to put these in your ears.
She's talking about earplugs.
Yes. Feels like the families of Benghazi just saying, and we're better than that.
Ah, yes.
It's just like Benghazi.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, leave it... God bless them.
Sure.
I mean,
if you can find a way to tie Benghazi to almost anything, plane crashes, why not?
That's it. You did it.
That's their new strategy.
Yeah.
Their news strategy is to make all news about Benghazi. And they've done it. And I wouldn't have guessed that there was a way to do
this. I know, this was a tricky one. Yeah. It took them almost 2 full weeks to get there.
I was going
to
say, they were letting CNN carry all the weight of having to report the story because they couldn't think of how
racking their brains.
How this related to Benghazi.
They got there.
The families. That's how.
Yeah.
Both had families involved. And the families don't know what happened.
Yep.
Just like Malaysia.
God.
So that you can be. Now you can be confident that you know what the connection is between Benghazi and the Malaysia flight. Because I also hadn't known what it was until... I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah.
Until now.
I hadn't either.
No.
But speaking of Benghazi...
Speaking of Benghazi...
It's the return of Hillary Pillory! Now, I didn't mean to intro the Hillary Pillory as sort of like, you know, her involvement with Benghazi, because I don't really care about Benghazi.
Nope.
I mean,
Nobody does
that it was a tragedy, but beyond that, I don't really care. But she's sort of enwrapped in that, so that's, I felt like, was a good segue.
Yeah.
But this is not about Benghazi.
No.
But it is about her foreign policy views, which she's stupidly announcing. Like an idiot. Like an idiot.
Hill, you're not going to be president if you remind people of what a hawk you are.
This is this is such a problem that she's having here. The thing is she's trying to sort of differentiate herself from the president because she feels like, I think that she probably thinks that she has to for whatever reason. But she's doing it by talking like a nutbag.
Yeah, that's her plan.
Yeah, that's her big plan. So she was speaking to the American Jewish Congress in New York, which is the place you have to act like a total crazy person.
Right, this is
like
a tricky situation for someone like her anyway.
Right.
Because her and her sort of like moderate Democratic buddies have to be so super pro-Israel that because they court this sort of vote, that they oftentimes find themselves saying things that are horribly insensitive and worse.
But if you thought maybe that Hillary would think that it would just be a good idea to sort of like let the, you know, president see if his Iran plan and was going to work, and that
she's not on board.
She's not into that.
No.
She doesn't care.
No.
She doesn't think it's going to work. All things should be on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly shouldn't take off the table bombing the shit out of
them. No, she loves a good bombing the shit out of somebody. It's her favorite thing in the world.
That we have to keep considering that at every turn.
Absolutely. We should consider that for every nation. Permanently.
Exactly. Canada?
Canada, why not?
They're close enough.
That's right.
It'd be easy to get to.
So true. They think they're so smug with their fucking healthcare.
I know.
She's just sort of out there telling potential Democratic supporters that the president's not pursuing the right path.
Like, come on.
Be a team player a little bit.
A little bit.
I mean.
Like, you worked for the man.
Right?
For God's sake.
You were his secretary
and also,
of state.
The reason that you're not president is because you voted for the Iraq war. It's this. Like, this
is
it.
It's this strategy.
Right here.
It's not taking bombing the shit out of a nation off the table.
Right. Has she learned nothing? She's learned nothing.
Take it permanently off the table.
Right?
Come up with be creative. Think of any other way that you can solve diplomatic problems.
Right? And you don't have to, I realize you have to act nutty at the American Jewish
Congress.
You don't have to do this. You talk about how great and wonderful Israel is, and you talk about how you're going to be there for them through thick and thin.
Exactly.
Which is
true, because you do it.
Right.
So you might as well, could talk for hours about that.
Right.
You just don't
announce that you're going to bomb Iran.
No,
just any,
just to
any
please
old time.
Everybody. That's not how it works.
Not when you're running for president, it's not how it works.
No.
As a Democrat. I mean, if you're John McCain, then
by all means. Bomb everyone. Yeah.
That's it.
That's your plan. No, but this is classic Hillary misstep.
Yep.
Number one. Uh-huh. Number two is...
Could be anything.
I have some thoughts on what number two is.
Could
as well.
Be running just another shitty campaign.
Right. Number two is having anyone who was involved in your life at any point during your last campaign still involved in your life. But number one is that she's not ashamed of her record on this issue, and she should be. The reason that everyone liked her as Secretary of State was because she didn't get to have opinions.
No, not about this anyway.
Not about this. Her opinions were like, let me tell the president what my opinion is so we can discuss a matter and he can decide what my opinion is when I actually go to the meeting.
And also, as Secretary of State, you're supposed to be a diplomat, so you don't go around announcing...
Telling everyone that you don't trust those damn Iranians
She's probably so glad to be free of that position because now she can announce that she wants to bomb whoever the hell she wants to.
Exactly.
Because she doesn't have
She's not afraid.
She doesn't have to be a diplomat any longer.
No. It's once a diplomat, though... Especially when the president that you were working for is still the sitting president.
I mean...
You should continue to be slightly diplomatic.
Agreed. Yes.
Even if you're at the American Jewish Congress.
Yep.
But, like, also, be a little careful, Hillary, about having to speak to crowds where you're going to have to re-announce that you're a hawk.
Just, yeah.
People are not into that.
Right.
And they're going to be less into it when all of this Russia business gets up in everyone's business. Because that is already feeling, like, a little bit too nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It's like a third party that we're going to go in to protect. And I'm certainly worried that we're going to at some point think to ourselves that some sort of military intervention is a great idea. And then we're not in a Cold War anymore. We're just in a fucking war with the Soviet Union.
Yeah, we're in a hot war.
We're in a hot war. Exactly. So this is bad timing.
Yeah.
Every time is bad timing. It's always bad timing. Some things that are good timing.
Fred Phelps.
Dead.
He's dead.
The dead man.
So terrible.
There are some people that you can write a comedy obituary for.
Yep.
Not a lot of people. Generally, if you're a comedy news source, you want to be slightly respectful.
Yep.
Of a figure. But someone who spent his life devoted to hate.
Yeah.
Is a good person to ridicule in death.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because this man did not deserve a respectful...
No, he didn't.
...mourning.
No, he didn't at all.
The Onion had... The first line of the Onion obituary is genius.
Yeah.
Fred Phelps Sr., the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church and the man who is widely credited with forever ending the gay rights movement in America, died today at age 84.
Yeah.
That's him.
Yeah, I know. The Onion obituary, the whole thing was just so brilliant. Perfect. I was like reading something. I was like searching for it to like show my family this weekend because I knew that they would appreciate it. Yeah. And like I Googled it and like actually the first thing that came up was like, it was one of the bloggers for like the New York Times or something like that. And they were like, the Onion's obituary for Fred Phelps is so perfect, I'm mad at it. Because like it really just was like...
Just captured all the glory.
Onion, when the Onion gets it right... They
win.
Oftentimes get it right. And it was just brilliant.
Well, and this is the kind of obituary that can really only be appropriately written by The Onion.
Right. I mean, even the Politico obituary was like sort kind of snarky. Scathing and snarky and like referenced like all of the people who sort of like thought that he did so many good things for the gay rights movement. Because like, I mean, like he was so ridiculously easy to ridicule and was just sort of like once you're blaming like dead soldiers coming home from a war like on you know the country's acceptance of homosexuality, it really sort of like makes the other side seem like they're
some loon bags,
real loon bags.
Well, and he also, I mean, I remember at one point my alma mater Vassar got a shout out from him. He called it an Ivy League whorehouse.
Yes.
It was the most exciting thing that ever happened to me as a Vassar alum.
Yeah.
It was a huge deal in the Vassar community. People could not have been more thrilled.
Yeah.
A, because he thought we were an Ivy League school. That was pretty exciting. But B, getting sort of a direct shout out from Fred Phelps is like winning the lottery of like being a progressive organization.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That's winning.
What you want.
Yeah, that's what you want. So he sort of like became such a parody of himself that it was sort of an honor to be singled out by him.
Yeah. Do you know what his former profession used to be, by the way, before he was disbarred from the state of Kansas?
Appalling.
He was a civil rights lawyer. We're not making this up.
No, that's a fact.
That's a fact. But he was disbarred by the Kansas Supreme Court. They stripped him of his license to practice in the state, concluding he made false statements in court documents and showed little regard for professional
ethics.
What
a surprise.
Surprise.
He's not a man who's shown regard for ethics in a lot of forums, including in dragging his poor extended family all over the fucking country to protest everyone under the sun.
What a lot of people don't know is his extended family are the only people that make up their church.
You would not know that because they get so much press.
There's less than 100 people, and they're all... He's got, like, 13 kids. They're basically all his family and his kids and their kids. It's like, you know, his 13 kids times their 13 kids, and then basically, that's your congregation.
Yeah.
They say on their website that anybody can come, but they also... have the right to vote anybody out that they don't feel like any longer like deserves, you know,
so
God's presence or in their life or whatever.
That is not basically a Phelps family member can be easily gotten rid of.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But also, who would want to hang out with the Phelpses?
Ugh.
Sounds like the worst.
Terrible. Oh, man.
But he's basically the one of the few people that we can sort of confidently say, we won't miss him. We're not sorry he's dead.
Nope.
Feel fine about all on all counts.
Yep.
On the heels of his death.
Yes. Like the day after.
Yeah. We get some good news from Michigan.
Yes.
They're going to be just marrying some gays over there.
Marrying up a storm in Michigan. Although, Well, it's a little tricky now, because basically what happened was on Friday, a federal judge overturned their gay marriage ban. And then Saturday, everybody was like a marrying frenzy.
Right, everyone went and got married.
Everybody went and got married. And then Saturday, the appeals court issued a stay until at least sort of like the end of the week to sort of like review the case. So now all these people that got married...
don't know if they're married.
They don't really know.
They're either married or they're not, but it's hard to know because... the same thing happened in California, but in a larger sense where there was a few weeks or months or whatever it was where people could marry and then they couldn't, and then it's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
So no one knows... no one knows what's going to happen with that, but I assume they're just going to, at some point, have to be married gays over there. Like, what's their plan in reviewing this?
The Supreme Court has sort of already, you know, overturned ban. Like, I can understand, like, why they want, like, a chance to sort of, like, review the specific case. And, like, don't want, you know... actually, I can't understand.
Nope.
Fuck it.
Screw it.
Just let everybody get married.
Whatever.
I was about to explain why the stay was a good idea.
Yeah. Like, what am I doing?
Don't be doing that. Stop
yourself.
Terrible
plan.
God. Idiot.
Meanwhile, Bill de Blasio, who's been getting a lot of flack in the press recently because his approval rating is very low.
Right, well, he sort of has had, like, some weird things happen where he was, like, not even really any, like, policy issues, but,
it was the car thing.
There was, like, the whole speeding thing where, like, his, you know, entourage was, like, speeding through the streets and, like, just, like, things like that that have been happening.
This is the kind of thing that, like, the Post makes into a story.
Exactly.
And it's, like, not a real thing, and it doesn't really reflect what people think about his policy.
No.
You know, he has vague plans to tax the rich, which makes everyone very nervous, but in New York City, you can't have new taxes without the approval of the governor.
Right. And he's not getting it. So
he's not going to get it. I feel like, in my opinion, he should tell Cuomo to go fuck himself.
I think that he absolutely should.
And just see if he can get away with raising taxes.
Yeah.
Just see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They'll stop him. It's fine. But I feel like he should really make a show of it.
Why not?
Why
right?
not? Screw it.
Yeah.
Like, what a bunch of fucking people from upstate New York get to talk about that.
What
anyway.
Do they know?
Anyway, but he has been doing a fairly good job on other issues of enacting his agenda.
Yeah.
In ways that maybe aren't getting a lot of attention, but are good nonetheless.
I was going to say, because they're not, you know, crazy stories about him speeding, so
no,
nobody cares.
Exactly. He's got a bill to expand people's ability to take days off when they are ill or their family members are ill, so like sick leave, you know, issues, because a lot of people don't get paid sick leave in New York.
That was a big victory, actually. That's a huge thing.
Especially considering sort of like the wage disparity issues in New York. I mean, that's a massive achievement. He's also, and this, in my opinion, is one of sort of like the most pressing issues that New York is facing, is there's a housing issue because no one can afford to live there anymore. And they, you know, Bloomberg and Giuliani before him had handed over these contracts to all these major developers. Everyone was making money hands over fist.
Yeah.
But he's gotten some concessions on a lot of these big developers to put affordable housing into their into their projects, or to do affordable housing, you know, along with their projects. So
And workers' wages too.
And like, and improve their workers' wages.
He's pressing them on raising their wages.
If you've lived in New York City at any time in the last 15 years, you know what kind of just like runaway construction has gone on there. This is a massive victory because it is really disheartening to live in a place where there's nothing but new housing going up everywhere around you, and no one can afford any of it.
Right.
Like, you just sort of, like, end up in this bizarre empty ghost town of, like, ugly corporate apartments.
Yeah.
So, that's a huge victory. And then there were a bunch of lawsuits that had to deal with racial inequalities in the fire department and the police department. And Bloomberg had sort of been actively not trying to sort those out. And so he's started to help deal with those more aggressively.
Yep.
And apparently, they're now going to be trying to stop blocking pay to, you know, pay people more for the development project. Oh, but that's what we were just talking about before.
Yeah.
Bloomberg had been blocking legislation that would have increased the wages for the workers
that
were
anymore.
Like the people that were involved with the developers, the people that were working for the developers on these construction projects. And his legal team is now going to stop all of that blocking and try to get that through, because that's another way in which construction should have been benefiting the community and was not.
Yeah. So if you really pull back the curtain of what he's been able to do since he's got an office, he's doing what he can.
And this is a city mayor, guys. This is not the president. Like, he's running. These are the kinds of legislation that really make a difference in a city. That,
exactly.
In any case, I don't know if you've been watching Cosmos.
I have been.
Brent's been watching Cosmos.
I haven't seen this week's
because I've only seen the first one.
It's very weird. It's very weird. The second one was the evolution episode,
right?
And it, you know, as it got some flack from the people that you would think would be, you know, out talking about it, basically
sure. the creationists,
the crazy people, the answers in Genesis people. Hmm. There are no answers in Genesis, nope. People, to anything.
There is a story Nothing. In Genesis.
It's a lovely story.
Yes, I mean, sure.
Yes.
One of the great stories. There is,
you know what, there's not science.
No science
in Genesis.
It's a myth.
None.
It's a mythology-related story. Yeah.
So, and I'm a Christian saying this.
Yeah. Brent is telling you this as a churchgoer.
There's no science there. If you're looking for answers, do not look in Genesis.
If you're looking for answers
Watch Cosmos.
To what is in Genesis, it's a good place to look. If you're looking for answers to scientific questions...
To where humans came from.
Right. That's not where you look.
It's not there.
No.
You can't find it there.
Right.
So, anyway, Danny Faulkner from Answers in Genesis wants equal time for creationists in response...
On Cosmos.
To Cosmos.
Yeah.
On Fox and all nine of the stations that they're simulcasting it on.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen.
No.
For various reasons. I mean,
all good reasons.
It shouldn't happen. But he was quoted, he says, creationists aren't even on the radar screen for them. They wouldn't even consider us plausible at all.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. And the perfect response was from Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's the host of Cosmos, who's a scientist.
Right.
People. He said, you don't talk about the spherical Earth with someone with NASA and then say, let's give equal time to the flat earthers. He's so good. I love him. I've always loved him. He's great. Yeah.
My mom, I think, he's
always on Real Time with Bill Maher.
Yeah.
They have him on a lot. He's really funny and he's obviously smart, but I mean, he's clever. He's sharp.
He's like and a clever. I think my mom like saw him on the subway or something like that at one point, I think. And like it was like everyone got real excited. Like, the whole subway car got really excited.
Like, yeah.
I'm sure she'll call me and tell me that that's not at all what happened, but
yeah, well,
that's how I remember the story.
Yeah. So anyway, that's not going to be happening, but it's just sort of hilarious that they would even think that like
This is what I took away from Jesus Camp, the movie, years ago when I saw Jesus Camp. And my dad saw it very recently, and he was like,
"Oh, it's horrifying."
But that was a movie where the people that were in the movie were also given an opportunity to watch it and thought it was a very accurate depiction of their lives.
Yes.
And like their reading of like what truth and you know what like facts are is just like so different from my conception of like what happens in the world.
Yeah.
That they didn't see that they were, like, in a comedy film.
Right. Well, and that's what I think was also so brilliant about that movie,
Yeah, too, that was... It was, like... Like, I saw in the East Village, people were laughing out loud. It played like a comedy film.
Yeah.
It was, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
It's terrifying, but hilarious. And to... You know, once you sort of, like, get the... Sort of... Try to internalize the idea that, like, the people that were in it not only don't think it's hilarious, but thought that that's what life is like. That's what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
You publish crazy textbooks that have information about science from the Bible, and then you just teach your kids that when you homeschool them. Like, that's what you do. And then you go to a weird camp together. Like,
I know.
The fact that... And that's what I feel like this is. Like, these people are literally living in a parallel society.
Right. Where the answers are in Genesis. Yeah.
And so, to them, it seems perfectly logical that if...
To ask
it's your belief
time.
That evolution happened. It's my belief that this crazy thing that I made up is happening. So why wouldn't you give us equal time?
Yeah.
It's like, they just don't live in the world. They don't live in the world that people live in.
Right.
They live in a crazy world where people are homeschooling their kids with science, quote, science textbooks that were based on biblical science.
Right.
Which is not a kind of science.
No. Oh, boy.
In any case, moving on to Florida.
Oh, God.
Where Floridian things are happening.
Yes.
Rick Scott's campaign is already...
I mean, there's been a lot of Republican sort of, like, supposed outreach toward, you know, the Hispanic community.
Right.
And what better place to be doing that in Florida? But also, apparently, what worse place to be doing that in Florida? Because they're not getting
it right
at
all.
We've already talked about a few specific things, like, where, you know, some people who were, like, working for the Republican Party, like, switched party affiliations, like, who were, you know, like, Hispanic people who were, like, trying to, like, you know, do, like, you know, outreach to get out the vote and things like that. Well, Rick Scott has a billionaire fundraiser that works for his campaign.
Right.
And his name is Mike Fernandez. He's Cuban. And he's been working on the re-election campaign because he's running against Charlie Crist right now.
It shouldn't be hard to do Latino outreach in Florida to Cubans.
As a Republican,
they're already Cubans. Republicans.
Right, exactly. So, well, he has quit. This guy.
Yeah.
Because of some... according to people on the campaign, there was an incident where everybody was joking around in, like, a very cartoonish, over-the-top Mexican accent while they were on their way to a Mexican restaurant to have lunch. People from the campaign...
There's been some racially insensitive jokery going on at the Rick Scott headquarters.
Yeah. While Mike Fernandez was in the room.
Hanging out in the room trying to do outreach to Latinos.
Right. He was the only one trying to do outreach to Latinos.
He's the only one... I mean, frankly, it's just sort of like... not been a successful strategy for them from the beginning, because we've already reported on issues with the Republican Party in Florida trying to do Latino outreach. But it's sort of hilarious that now they are without a coordinator with which to coordinate said outreach. Like, right. At this point, it's like,
just quit.
Stop that.
That's money. You were paying him money that could be spent elsewhere.
Right.
Like, have a media buy with the money, right, with exactly. the salary that you were paying this
Find
guy.
Find some it's- good... bigoted white people that will vote for you with a media buy in a market that is horrible.
Yeah, stop looking for
Latino voters. It's a terrible idea.
God.
Not a plan.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Longview, Texas is another awful place. But they had previously hired Ted Nugent to perform at their 4th of July festival, and they were going to pay him $32,000.
Yes.
They recently decided... that they would pay him $16,000 to not show up.
To go nowhere near
Longview, Texas, after his whole subhuman mongrel comment.
Do not come. We will pay you $16,000 to not come here.
Come.
Do not come.
Yeah. Pay you money to not show up.
How do we get into that business?
Right? I mean, I feel like if they are also not looking for, like, a communist to go to their 4th of July festival, they could pay me to not show up.
Yeah, they probably are looking for... a communist to not show up at their festival.
No, yeah. I think I could be that communist. I think that might be a good area for me to get into.
Yeah.
Just making money as a person who doesn't show up places. Because, like, I'm not going to show up in Longview, Texas regardless.
No. Might as well get paid to not go.
But in what is really the most important news in the Republican universe this week.
Yes.
First of all, well, there's two parts of this news. The first part is that Rush Limbaugh has a children's book.
Yes.
And if you don't exist in the weird Rush Limbaugh universe,
you might not have heard of it.
We're here to tell you what the title is, because that's the most important part of this story. It's called Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims, Time Travel Adventures with Exceptional Americans.
Yeah.
That's his book.
And the cover to this book
is hilarious.
Genius, because it's sort of like a cartoonish cover, and it's like... it's like a colonist, like a settler, basically. And then it's got Rush Limbaugh's face, like, right on the... It's his face. It's Rush Limbaugh's face.
And then a tiny horse, like a mysteriously tiny horse.
It's so creepy
looking. It's so weird.
It's bizarre.
But part two of this news is that this book is now a finalist for the Author of the Year category at the Children's Choice Book Awards, run by the Children's Book Council.
Yeah, Limbaugh is one of the four finalists for Author of the Year.
Yeah. Apparently, those are chosen based on who sort of scores highest on the bestseller list.
And the kids are going to vote now.
Right. We'll see what they're not kids
vote
are up
for this.
To.
No kids bought this book.
No.
And no kids wanted their parents to buy this book.
No, and people who got this book and were kids actively avoided reading it.
No.
Aside from being a book with a weird cover, it also looks like a book you don't want to open.
No, it's not. This is not... Daddy, read me Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims for bedtime.
Unless you're one of the Jesus Camp families, in which case you might not have other reading material that's more interesting.
Yeah.
So that's happening out there. Then, we also have a story from California, our very own state, about something that's going on in our governor's race. This might not surprise you. This is the GOP primary race that we're talking about.
Yeah.
One of our four GOP candidates... Or no, one of the four candidates who's running.
Is this within the GOP? Yeah, it is.
Okay.
He's one of the candidates who was like introduced at like the California Republican State Party's semi-annual convention. He's like a person who's like obviously not going to get the nomination, but like the fact that he's like speaking,
like a rising star in the Republican
able
Party.
To speak at a convention is like a thing because he's a giant felon.
Yeah,
like on multiple occasions.
Yeah. He spent a decade in prison for convictions for voluntary manslaughter and assault with the intent to commit rape.
Oh, boy.
And he's got a very extensive criminal record.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. He pled guilty to carrying a concealed firearm in 92. In 93, he was convicted of...
Two counts of assault.
That was the rape year.
He's also in 98, he accepted a plea deal on a charge of loitering to solicit a prostitute. Yes,
and also in that same year, he pleaded no contest to a voluntary manslaughter charge after hitting a man with his vehicle and was sentenced to 12 years in state prison. So he's a murderer and rapist.
And he could be our governor.
Perfect.
Yes. I remember the recall election where, like, everybody
Gary Coleman ran, and, you know, the porn star
and, like, everyone.
Yeah.
I feel like let's have another election like
let's
that here.
Let's revisit that.
Yeah. That was a great moment in California's history, if by great you mean terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well, this is a good year to, like, bring out the crazies, because Jerry Brown is going to win in a landslide, because everybody is loving the shit out of Jerry Brown right now. Everybody is wishing that Jerry Brown was 15 years younger, because we would be trying to elect him president in 2016. So, like, bring out the Looney Tunes, because, like, it's just a competition to lose to Jerry Brown anyway, so you can run whoever you want. You can run a rapist. You can run...
This is a great time for a Rent Is Too Damn High party-style figure to emerge in California.
Totally.
Because, like with that election, Cuomo was going to win it. There wasn't really a contest going on.
Oh, yeah, no.
They had those great debates with all of
classic
the candidates.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been a more exciting situation.
Getting spooked on SNL.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I feel like California could be ripe for that kind of situation if we're going to have convicts on the roster.
Right?
Why not? Let's go for it. Do the jungle primaries apply
here? I don't know. For the governor? Maybe. I'm not sure.
Because that could get really exciting. Because then anyone,
big time,
literally any person can run.
Yeah. It could be Jerry Brown versus, like, the craziest person on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orly Tates.
Whoever the governor ends up being in 2016, they need to fix the drought, because, yes, it's been causing water shortages.
Sure,
and, yes, that's bad for fishing. It's bad for planting of the entire country's food. But we have found out why it's really fucking bad this week. Because,
especially bad for Californians.
Right. Because it is bringing rabid skunks out of their natural habitat to search for food and water.
And what are they finding for food? Our dogs.
Our pets.
Our animals.
Yeah. They are literally these skunks. Most skunks are rabid. Like, so many animals are just rabid. Skunks are rabid.
I had no idea.
Possums are rabid.
I'm very concerned about this.
Raccoons are rabid. They're just going around being rabid. Like, that's what happens. Like, I don't know why. It's just, that's just it. That's what goes on in that genre of animal kingdom, basically. The gross night-crawly animals. Okay? That's what's going on. And so, but, like, their natural habitat is, I don't know, where is it?
Who cares?
The forest or whatever.
Somewhere else.
But they don't have food and water there.
No.
So they're coming out, and it's like a skunk zombie apocalypse in California, basically. Like, this county, El Dorado County, is, like, literally warning people to, like, be on the lookout for rabid skunks. They're warning people to, like, keep their dogs on short leashes. Like,
I was saying to Brent,
this is a problem.
You shouldn't get to be both a skunk
and rabbit.
You shouldn't be able to spray people and bite them.
That's a terrible combination of things.
You should only get to one of those things.
I think they're choosing to be rabid, but I mean...
If you're a skunk, you shouldn't be able to get the disease that makes you rabid, because you're already a skunk. That's bad enough. You already have something.
Yeah.
You don't need the rabidity.
No. God. Can you imagine what pariahs these rabid skunks must be from the rest of the skunk community? Or maybe they're like skunk heroes.
I was going to say, they're the skunkiest skunks out there, really. They're doing the skunk's work, sort of, but double the effectiveness.
Yeah, but they're like charging after dogs, and like they're like telling people like how to like know whether the skunks are rabid. Apparently they like walk slowly, but like also like...
They act drunk.
They act drunk, right.
They can't aggressive drink. And drunk.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's creepy.
So we've got to, if this rapist governor has a solution for the rabid skunks.
Right, we're willing to listen.
I'm going to listen. I will listen to anybody.
Yeah, I'm not trying to die in
problem.
A rabid skunk scenario.
No.
At
that's
all.
Not it.
No. In any case, that's the news. We hope we left you with some food for thought on the whole skunk front. Next week, we'll be back with what we can only hope is the end to the Malaysia Airlines saga. A less terrifying situation going on in Crimea.
Yep.
And great news on Obamacare.
Oh yeah,
That'll be it.
We'll be coming to
you
the day before.
Yeah.
We'll know. So we'll have updated Nate Silver style math.
Exactly.
What's his GABA?
GABA. We'll try to read his website for you. It's not clear that we'll be able to fully, but
understand
we're going to do our best.
Yeah.
And with that, we say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.